Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? Sorry, I've been MIA lately. I haven't been on the road as much. I hosted the Art Director Guild Awards and kind of focused my attention on that. And now it's pilot season in wonderful California, Los Angeles, where there's only two seasons, pilot season and just warm, beautiful days. I've just been trying to memorize stuff and going into rooms, trying to make people like me that don't know me, and then leaving, unaware if they like me or not. It's pretty intense, but doesn't stop us from doing the podcast. This, as you know or don't know, this podcast is designed to analyze jokes that fail and wonder why they failed and then work on making them better. I don't really have too many new ones for you this week. That's why I've been procrastinating a little. And then I realized we don't need to always do that. We can just look at other stuff, like my dad. Here is my dad telling a joke.
Well, one very wintry night, I went to Burn Dairy to get milk and half, and these two older ladies were there, and it was snowing and cold and blowing, and one turned to the other and said, "Agnes, I bet we get 9 inches tonight." And I said, "Don't you wish?"
That's my father. That's where I come from. That's who helped shape me. Here's another quick thing. I talk about this in my stand-up, my new hour of stand-up, and sometimes I don't think people believe me when I describe how my father is. So here's some more proof.
So there I was in the third grade, and we were all to do this little dance about teapots. So I put one hand on one hip, and I said, "I'm a little teapot, short and stout. Here is my handle, and here is my... Oh, good heavens, I'm a sugar bowl." I had two handles.
My dad has two modes. He's either pretty inward and just like kind of quiet, and he looks like he has the world on his mind and kind of stoic. Or he can flip a switch and be like that and just be really energetic and flamboyant and telling jokes. And he thinks the word weenus is hilarious. He has his PhD in rhetoric. He went to Northwestern and Oxford. And the guy's brilliant. And he's a great musician, sings opera. But the little things make him laugh and make him happy. And I think I got that from him. And I'm very appreciative that he gave me that gift. Because in the end of the day, if you can't giggle about something stupid, you're fucked. That's kind of what I want to talk about this episode. I read maybe 3 books since last time, all very different and all very insightful. The one that I really want to highlight that I think is just absolutely amazing, it's called The Humans by Matt Haig. Basically, it's a novel. Lately, I haven't been reading a lot of novels. I've been reading more science-y books or history books. But this book is the best of both worlds because it's about a space alien that has to become this professor. This professor figures out a theorem that will change the course of human existence. And somewhere on a distant planet, these aliens decide that humans shouldn't progress in this way. And their society is based on pure math and logic. They never die. They're based completely on prime numbers. So he comes to Earth and becomes this professor, and he has to make sure anyone who knows this new knowledge is dead, and then he'll leave. So that's the format to allow this author to analyze human nature from the perspective of an alien. And the alien is based on pure logic. And there's so much humor in this book, and there's so much insight, because it's this great story of this father trying to reconnect to his son and his wife, because he realized that the professor was a pretty bad husband and father, and this alien is trying to figure out what to do so he can accomplish his task. And in the meantime, obviously, he starts valuing human nature and all that good stuff, but it's not sugar-coated. There's a lot in there
Right.
that is pretty awesome. And there's a few quotes in it that I love. One is the sound of laughter. Laughter is the sound of truth hitting a lie. I love that. And there's another part where he's in a mental institution and he's talking to this mad person. And another thing is laughter is like, laughter and madness are the only ways out of life. And I just think that's incredible. Because this alien is trying to figure out what laughter is. And I think sometimes on this podcast, I'm like that, where I'm like, I feel like an alien trying to figure out why someone's laughing or why someone isn't laughing. And my goals are to bring people together and make people happy, because that's what will make my career work, and it makes me happy on a deep level. There's at the very end, this doesn't ruin anything because I'm not going to tell you any plot points, but he gives a list of advice to humans. And I'll just read you a couple that are awesome. Shame is a shackle. That's it. And I believe that completely. As you can see by my dad giggling about the word weenus, I wasn't raised with a lot of shame. My dad is, his parents are Irish Catholic and Czech Jew. That is a shame sandwich, guys. There's more shame in that combination than you can possibly imagine. So I think my dad went the other direction and it was like, I am not gonna give a shit. And I remember once when I was a little kid, he even told me, he was like, I can't wait to be old so that I can be really crazy. Like, he loves it. He takes pride in it. So shame is a shackle is great. Don't feel shame. You know, you can feel regret or you could feel like you didn't accomplish something you wanted to, or you're angry at yourself because you made someone else feel bad, or you were too self-indulgent and it hurt someone else. But that's different than shame. Shame is bad. Another one is peanut butter sandwiches go great with wine. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. I think that's kind of tied in with the shame thing. It's like, don't let anyone tell you what shouldn't go together. Basically, if it's not hurting someone else, they have no right to tell you shit. Another one is history is a branch of math. Economics is a branch of religion. I like that. That's awesome. The news should start with math and poetry and move down from there. The space alien in the book watched the news and couldn't believe how much it was focused on horrible things. I also just saw the movie Nightcrawler, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Great movie. Very similar. I've always had that idea. CNN magnifies things that make you want to hate each other. They want to. Like the Ferguson shooting and all this stuff, they want you to feel that anger. If that was a white person that got shot, it wouldn't have gotten the same coverage. I know that because I know a white person in LA, that was shot and killed by the LA Police Department, and it didn't get any coverage, really, at all. So, of course, you know, black people in America have it worse, but just know that news is entertainment and they want to fuck with your brain. And I think there's an inverse relationship between the pain of your life and the pain you seek in news. Where if your life is really good and you feel provided for, almost to the point of boredom, you want news that's just awful. And if your life is really awful, you want news that's uplifting. Like if you look at old newsreels from the 20s, it's like, Roosevelt signs a new deal. A new age is coming. America is taking over. You know, it's so positive. And then you watch the new news now and it's just Ebola around the corner. Danger in your fridge. And back then there was a Great Depression. People were starving in the streets to death. And they were like, another diamond mine found in Alaska. The future is bright. So news almost kind of balances out your pain and what you need. Like in Nightcrawler, that was one of the plot points, was that the producers were like, the news we want is that black crime is invading white areas. And there was one situation where there was a triple homicide, and they loved it because it was in a white neighborhood. And then when they found out it was drug-related, they didn't play that story because it would go against the, you know, what they're pushing. And I agree with that 100%. Here's a couple more of these fun quotes. One day we will laugh at everything. I agree with that. Don't worry about being angry. Worry when you cannot get angry anymore, because that's when you've been consumed. I think anger is a negative emotion. I try to fight mine as much as I can because it's a real sign of weakness. But I like that quote as well, because nothing would be scarier than not giving a shit. That would be my nightmare. Dogs are geniuses of loyalty. I like that. It's true. I think people love dogs because they're incapable of lies. That's what I believe. I think that the power to deceive is truly what makes a human a human. And I think dogs are incapable of deception. And we love the honesty in their eyes. Evolution is based on mistakes. Great quote. Kind of fuels this whole podcast. That every single good quality you are is because of past mistakes, genetic mutations. A mutation that wasn't supposed to happen worked, and that's why it stuck. I love that. Don't be cool. The universe is cool. The warm bits matter. Great quote. Everything's cold. It's the little tiny warm spots near stars that are cool. Your mother should write a novel. Encourage her. Great quote. Random, but great idea. It's just, yeah, your mom should write a novel about her life. Your mom matters. Encourage your mom. My mom's great. I love my mom. Okay, now we're going to talk about another book I read that couldn't be more opposite. It's called The 48 Laws of Power. Before we get into that, I'm just going to play you a sound of my dad saying, excuse me.
Scoozamoo.
That's real, guys. That's real. Granted, I was telling him to do it, but it's only because I knew he wanted to do it, and that's what it sounds like. I read in a book once about depression. I can't remember what book, but if you just make yourself smile, you start feeling happier. My dad just laughs at his own shit. He's not going to wait for anyone else to laugh at it. Instead of saying, excuse me, he says, scusa moo. And I've seen the power of it. It opens doors. When you show that you're having fun with yourself, people will respond to that. Which brings me to this book, The 48 Laws of Power. I read this. It was recommended to me by a couple friends. And I Googled it. And a lot of rappers live by it, like 50 Cent and Jay-Z and all these people claim that it's like their Bible, I think, or something. And it's fascinating. There's some points in it that I think are amazing, but there's also some major contradictions. So let's just talk about it. 48 Laws of Power. Basically, it's a guide book to acquiring power. And the preface or the introduction is kind of cool because I agree with a lot of this stuff. I agree. I always thought that when you see someone constantly publicizing their good deeds, that it's manipulative. That when you keep seeing someone be like, look at this, you know, child from poverty that I adopted. Look at this child. Everyone, look at me. Look at what I've done. I'm curing, you know, AIDS. They're manipulating you. The people that are actually doing stuff just because they want to have no desire to tell you about it. I've known those people. They just do stuff to be nice. And you know, it's one thing to publicize a good act to try and get more people to do it, to like try and build a community around something. That's fine. I'm not saying not to publicize a charity, but when you're trying to draw attention to yourself for being so noble, it's exactly the opposite. It's a sign of a desire for power. And power is, as illustrated in this book, a game. It's a game to win, and everyone wants it, and people are trying to get it. I disagree. I agree in a sense. I think that everyone has to admit that they want power. They want power over their own lives, where they don't want to, you know, that's why everyone's scared of the dark. Everyone's scared of comets. People are scared of the unknown, because for all of existence, for all life, the unknown could spell death and destruction. So power is necessary. But to have power over others, I don't think everyone necessarily wants that. But this book, I think, is more applicable to people seeking political power, because it is a game and it's very manipulative. And I'm not saying it's bad. I don't think there's good or bad in really anything. That kind of goes back to the don't, you know, shame is a shackle. If you want to pursue power, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I want to pursue greatness, which I guess goes hand in hand with power in a sense. I want to be seen for what I'm good at and respected. And I guess that is a sense of power. So, yeah. But power for the sake of power, I don't see the draw as much as, like, you know, a president or something. Another good, I'm going to highlight the good before I criticize it. Be wary when people strive for equality of everyone. But now, don't misinterpret what I'm saying. Everyone deserves the same rights. That's a fact. Seeking rights is necessary for all genders, all races, everything. Everyone deserves the same rights, the same general experience of life. But to say everyone's equal is wrong. And whoever says that is trying to get the masses to give them power. Because as soon as you say everyone's equal, you're basically saying the people with more skill should be put on the same level with people with less skill, and that's not true. I'll never be a horse jockey. I'm too big. These are just facts. Now, that's a dangerous road. That opens up a lot of room for bigotry from ignorant people. But I've never, ever, ever trusted people that say, you know, everyone's equal, you can be anything you want. No, you can't. You just can't. Just because I don't have perfect vision at all, I have to wear glasses or contacts, I could never be a pilot. I can't even fit in half that shit. I couldn't even go into the military. Well, I could go into a few branches, but I'm 6'7". I could never fit in a fucking tank. I've tried. So when people just be wary when someone like Julius Caesar became emperor of Rome because it was something, the tribute of the plebeians, something like that. There's this title that used to be seen as gross. Like what we like modern democracy back in the day was seen as very vulgar. Vulgar actually means vulgate, which means of the people. And to appease to the people, to try and get the people, like the masses, to love you is manipulative. Because the truth is harsh as fuck. You can't afford that jet ski. Don't buy it. If you do, you'll go in debt. And then you deserve what you get from that. That's fucked up to say. No one wants to hear that. But it's just true. You don't deserve the person you're in love with all the time. If they don't like you, you don't deserve that person. If you hurt them, they deserve to leave you. Like, you don't deserve everything. Life isn't equal. So, you know, I've always been wary of that as well. Rule number one is never outshine your master. I see that as being pretty good advice. It's also, you know, can be dangerous. That's what causes bureaucracy, I think. I think that once a company establishes dominance, a lot of times their inability to keep growing comes from a power structure happens. And then people that outshine their master aren't promoted because it's seen as threatening. You know, Stalin used to execute any general that's shown on the battlefield. Like, his best people he would kill, because they were threats to him. And another thing that I liked about this book is how the king's court still exists. Like, we're still in the king's court, but you know? Never outshine your master. However, my criticism of this, though, is the best masters want greatness. Genghis Khan was notorious for taking the strongest of each field and giving them power, and that helped his power. But that kind of goes with my point of bureaucracy, where it's like Genghis Khan started the Mongol Empire. Like, he was the one who unified all the tribes. He was right out of Avatar. He, you know, it was this crazy thing. And then, you know, 3-4 generations down the line, a power structure is established, and then nothing happens because people with power are scared of anyone that's a threat. And I guess that can be a shame, or it's understandable. You know, sometimes if your girl or wife or husband or boyfriend has a very attractive boss or something, you don't want them hanging out after work with drinks because you feel threatened, even though they haven't done anything. It's human nature. Like, we're vicious little monkeys. But here's another thing I noticed about this book. There's a lot of contradictions. Because, okay, rule number one is never outshine your master. But rule number 17 is enter with boldness, which basically means stand out. You know, kind of like that one dude wearing that giant hat at the Grammys. Pharrell. Pharrell's, like, Curious George hat. You know, they stand out. Kanye, I think so many music people love this book because it applies to music so much. Because that power alpha, you know, Kanye West is a genius of power. Like, he'll say or do some crazy shit and just watch the monkeys dance, including myself. You know, I'll make fun of him on Twitter and Facebook and all this stuff. And he's our puppet master in a lot of ways. You think he doesn't know what he's doing? Like, storming a stage, you don't think he knows that any publicity is good. That's another one of the laws. Which one is it? Attention at all costs. Law number 6. Kanye, attention at all costs. Doesn't matter what the attention is, but do it. A few of these laws are very, they sound evil on the surface. You know, it's about being duplicitous. You know, never commit to anyone or anything. You know, your friends are sometimes your biggest enemies. All this stuff. You know, now it's very, on the surface, it sounds like a guidebook to make you a bad person. But I can detach enough and read it for what it is, which is a guidebook to a game of power. And that's kind of reality in politics and a lot of, you know, high stakes corporate world, and even with musicians and stuff like that. But that's the thing. It's like, if the world is a court and the king's court exists, I'm the jester as a comedian. So it's like my role isn't as intense. But any desire to acquire power, you know, should read this shit. But a lot of contradictions. Okay, like another one. Number 9, great advice. Win through actions, not argument. If you win through an argument, you still don't always win. You still kind of come across like an asshole sometimes. Because I've faced that problem before. I have a bit about that, about being pulled over for being talking on the cell phone. I tell the cop why. He says, you have to drive with two hands. I say, is it illegal to be a one-armed driver? Pretend I'm one arm. This is my bonus arm. You have no jurisdiction over it. And then he handcuffs me, and I'm like, you couldn't handcuff me if I only had one arm. And it's really funny because you can see it's a good argument. It's absurd, and I still lose. And the other day, he still gave me like 3 tickets. It's a true story. You know, even if you win an argument, you still lose. Like Cicero in Rome, you know, it's like he's still fucking killed. And he was the best rhetorical arguer possibly ever. Number 16, absence is respected. That removing yourself from situations make people desire your approval. That when you don't go to the bar you go to all the time, or when you aren't always seen, you seem more mysterious, and in turn you get more power. Here's the thing though, guys. Number 17 is do not build a fortress because isolation is dangerous. Okay. Those are that's called a contradiction. If being absent gives you power, and they cite historical examples. This one ruler wouldn't let anyone see him. Like every 2 weeks he would take one courtier and then he would rule on it. And that he had like a 50 or 60 year rule in like the Assyrian Empire, some horrible place. And then the other number 17 is don't build a fortress because isolation is dangerous, means that if you're not amongst the people, if you're kind of like in a Bronx Tale where I think Sonny was the guy's name, like he would always be around his people. Because you have to like hear when someone wants to overthrow you and you have to know the people you're ruling, you know? So that's an exact contradiction. So that makes no sense to me. Okay, like number 34 is act like a king. You know, dress like a king, be a king. You know, dress for success is kind of like the cliche. But number 21 is play a sucker to catch a sucker, which means make yourself more dim-witted than you actually are, so that people overshow their hand and you can manipulate them. Those are also contradictions. Because if you act like a king to exude this, you know, dress for success, you exude this power, that's the opposite of, you know, like number 21, play a sucker to catch a sucker, you would dress like shit so that people assume you have nothing, and then that's how you manipulate them. Interesting. Number 17, people want to believe in something. Give them a belief. I think that's true. The world's scary as fuck. 85% of the universe is dark matter that we can't identify. That is scary, guys. 85% of all matter in the universe, we have no idea where it is or what it is. That's horrifying. So when you see these Bill Maher's of the world that you know, attack religion so fiercely, and I'm not going to knock the guy because he's not here to defend himself, but how the fuck does anyone know anything? So to believe in a god or a deity or something greater than us is more logical than not. Like, what the fuck is all this? That goes back to the humans. Oh, where's this other quote? I wrote it down. You shouldn't have been born. They did the math of it. It's like the concept of your birth is as impossible as anything could possibly be impossible. Your existence is as close to impossible as can be. So to dismiss the impossible is to dismiss your own existence. Great quote. That's why people need to believe in something. That's why my belief system is based around very simple things. Hydration, you know, full bellies, empty balls. That's kind of like what I like to, that's how I like to think. You only are what you're capable of loving, what can love you. Whether or not you're drained, like my balls need to be drained a lot and my belly needs to be filled. And when that happens, I'm happy. And that's all I can fucking, that's all I know. Basically, I like to look at the world the way my dog looks at me. Just, do you want to go outside? Do you have a treat? Let me fuck your leg. What's another one? Rule number 45, preach the need for change, but never change too much. I mean, sound familiar? Every president we've ever had. Can you imagine if one was actually honest and they're like, I don't want to change anything. There's poor people, but they're poor because of a lot of times the decisions they made. Yes, there is previous systems that keep people poor and keep people fat, but there's no possible way of changing that without dismantling a lot of other shit that we can't do. Imagine if someone was that honest. Sure, there's parts of the country that cannot get the food necessary to stay lean, but to change that, we would have to dismantle the entire capitalist system. So we won't. So you're going to stay fat. Sure, there's a lot of inner city black neighborhoods that are destined for awful shit unless somebody miraculously can get out. And that's because of the vestiges of slavery and ignorant hate that came originally because African slaves were immune to fucking malaria, and that's the only reason we stopped using white people in the New World. But yeah, how do you change that? You have to take money from somebody that earned it and give it to someone who didn't. What do you, you need guns? You need an army to do that. You can't just tell people to do that. That's one thing about, I don't have political stances because they're both so fucking absurd. My parents are both such over the top liberal Democrats. I mean, you can, I mean, if you want to, here's my dad telling another joke if you forgot.
This very, very fat married man comes out of the shower. He hops onto the scale and he calls to his wife. He said, I'm so fat, I look down, I can't even see my penis. And his wife said, why don't you diet? He said, what color would you prefer?
Yep, that's called liberal, guys. I'm liberal in social causes, but I think that, you know, Democrats a lot of times are the biggest. Okay, like my parents once had a dinner guest told a joke that Democrats are the first people to stand up for someone and then the first people to sit down. And then the right is, you know, they take too many rights away from other people. So how do I get behind them? That's why I don't have a side. Because they're both so absurd to me that I, yeah. But preach the need for change, but don't actually change. I mean, that's kind of the deal. I can't imagine if a president was actually honest. Maybe it would blow everyone away and they would be the most successful president in history. Who knows? I mean, no one can see the future, you know? Like, look at South Park. They had a video of Jesus fighting Santa Claus that went viral before the internet was big, where people were just passing a VHS tape to each other because they hit a chord that no one else had hit, where they were taking the sacred and making it just a fucking joke. So who knows? Maybe a president could do that. But I just, after reading the 48 Laws of Power, I think there's a lot in this about politics and how these people can never really be honest. Because then you're perceived as a threat to someone else. And then you're dismantled. But yeah, I'm not trying to sound depressing because our country is amazing. Our world is amazing. We're so free that I can put this on the internet and have anyone listen to it that wants to. But the flip, there's an underbelly of the internet and freedom and open forums. I just read an article. I have no idea what it is. Seth MacFarlane tweeted it. It's from the New York Times. I can't remember, but cyberbullying's almost flipped sides. We're now, if watchdog groups think that you're joking about something that's insensitive, they will like literally get you fired and destroy your life. Some woman tweeted, flying to Africa, I don't have AIDS because I'm white or some shit, which is obviously a joke. And she was fired from her job because it got like 10,000 retweets. It was trending on Twitter. You know, people are fucking crazy. Everyone always thinks unlimited freedom is such a good thing. That's why we keep falling into power structures, because unlimited freedom for everyone would just be a disaster. That's why, you know, Steve Jobs, renegade, revolutionary, visionary, does this amazing thing, forms this company, changes everything, unites music and apps and retail and movies and, you know, all of this shit. And then it just kind of stops changing after he died, because you can't keep up that pace. That's just a sprint. Like, at some point, people have to find their place in the pack. And I've never had a problem with that for some reason. I don't mind. That's why that never outshine your master thing has always been easy for me. I like knowing where I fit. And I'll seize control if things fall apart. That happened to me at the Art Director Guild Awards. Like, I go out, you know, we have Christopher Nolan and George Clooney and Anne Hathaway and some of the most powerful and brilliant and talented and respected people in my industry are sitting in the audience. And that's intimidating. And the first couple minutes weren't, I'll be honest with you, I didn't just start off crushing at all. I think sometimes very powerful, very successful people have a sense of fear because they feel so exposed and they don't want to be made fun of, or they were bored, or they thought it was just another award show and not a comedy show. Whatever it was a struggle up front. As the show went on, there was a point where there was a lot of technical difficulties and I had to go out and just do stand-up. And that's when I got them because I started doing just stand-up. It was like, they're a crowd and people will just fit into a crowd, you know? Doesn't matter who you are. We're all pretty much the same. And I had them. And then they became the best crowd ever because a lot of these people are so brilliantly smart that comedy just works on them because, you know, comedy is a cognitive game and, you know, very emotional people. I mean, that's why I loved watching Christopher Nolan talk so much, because you could tell that guy, he's so far beyond. Okay. One time when I was 10 years ago, I'm headlining a club and this feature was like, how do you headline? How do you become a headliner? I'm like, when I was featuring, I never asked that. I always asked, how do I get the front row to want to fuck me? Okay, that's pretty vulgar, but it's the same concept. I was watching Christopher Nolan talk, and I realized that he wasn't like, how do I get power? He's like, how do I make a car with no front axle? And then power and money became a byproduct of that. And I could see that he's like focused on something amazing, that he's obsessed about something, and then everything else falls into place. What was I originally talking about? Oh, yeah. So when I'm doing this set, I realized that then they trusted me and I was accepted into their group as a leader at that night. And then as soon as the show's over, I'm back to my life. They're back to their life. But what I mean about power structures, I follow the leader very well, but when shit, everything fell apart and then I took control and was like, I'll play you the piano, I'll do stand up, I'll make sure that you're okay. And there is not a human alive on this planet that does not respond well when someone makes them feel safe. And I saw that. I saw that, you know, the more you have to lose. And I was in a room with just demigods of modern America and the world where I'm like, you know, Anne Hathaway said I was funny on stage. Like that to me blew my mind. And people were like, oh, you know, I just said, you know, we're all basically the same. And I do believe that. But there is also something to be said for great people. Like someone like her, someone like Christopher Nolan, George Clooney, you know, people that have helped, Vince Vaughn, Adam Sandler, Clinton, Obama, the Bushes, you know, whatever your politics are, these are just great humans. And when you get to see them like laugh and treat you like that, it was pretty fucking awesome. And that came because I made them feel safe. And so, yeah, I guess I'm kind of over-focusing on this first law of power. But my brother, I was telling him about this book. He goes, they should write a book called 48 Laws of Power for Dudes Over 6 Feet. Because that's another thing. When you're like monstrously tall, you never even think about this shit. Because like from the time you're a child, you always have people looking at you. So it's like, I almost am not, I don't really fit into a lot of these laws. So it's kind of confusing. I also read another book, What If, by Randall Monroe. Check that out if you like stupid what if questions. He actually will do all the physics behind it, and it's pretty awesome. Like if you're like, what if, you know, gravity stopped and the earth started spinning fast, you know, he'll show you what would happen. So it's like a fun, like coffee table type read, but that's also good. All right, guys. I didn't really do my normal podcast today, but I didn't want to go more than, you know, 10 or 11 days or 2 weeks or whatever without, you know, making something. But in the end of the day, life is great. Seeking power is fine. It's a game, but just know you die. So if you're sacrificing who you are to get power, you lose it anyway because you will become dirt. The good news is, the fact you're alive means you won the mega, 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 mega lotto to the 5,000th power. So enjoy the fuck out of your day. Full bellies, empty balls, stay hydrated. And ladies, I don't know what the equivalent is for your empty balls. But, you know, if anyone knows, just tell me. All right. Bye.
Scoozamoo.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.